once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this special edition of Bang the Book Radio for Wednesday, June 12th, chatting about the U.S. Open with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. As we've talked about here with Bang the Book Radio over the summertime, doing some special one-off editions, whether it's for golf majors, the Triple Crown. We talked college football on Tuesday with Brad Powers at bradpowerssports.com. Lots of good stuff coming your way on Bang the Book Radio here the rest of this week with the Bettors Box on Thursday. Then also as we go throughout the summer months here, taking a look at the NFL, at college football, the Open Championship about a month away. So we got a lot of stuff coming your way here on the program. Lots of great stuff over at bangthebook.com as well. Make sure you check that out, including our NFL season win total previews. Brian's already done some videos for us over on our Bang the Book YouTube page with all eight divisions, but our writers doing all 32 teams over at the website. So be sure to keep an eye out for that, as well as daily MLB, weekly soccer, tennis, golf, NASCAR, UFC, you name it. We've got it over at bangthebook.com, your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at BSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. We bring Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, onto the program now. Brian, how's it going today, man?
All right, Adam. Looking forward to this. I think this is going to be a spectacular U.S. Open. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I think so, too. This should be a real good one here. Sixth time at Pebble Beach, third time since the Y2K scare. We were here in 2000 and also 2010. Tiger Woods winning the first one there in 2000. Then you had Graham McDowell in 2010. So we'll see what 2019 brings us here. And first and foremost, Brian, let's talk about this. Pebble Beach, obviously, a course that they play at every year for the Pro-Am. A lot of people, and I fell victim to this because I didn't really think about it as I was writing my preview, a lot of people going to look at past performances, past results, past finishes for that Pro-Am, they're going to forget, much like I did, that three courses are used for that event with Spyglass Hill and Monterey Peninsula. So you could get yourself into a little bit of a problem if you're looking at, you know, recent course form data for that event.
That's a great point. Two of those rounds are played at Pebble Beach, and I do believe that the guys that ultimately have good history in the Pro-Am, they light Pebble Beach up in that thing. So it's a good starting point. You're right. It's not four rounds at that track. It could be said, too, the guys that we're pointing towards play better at Pebble Beach than they do at Spyglass Hills, you know. I think a lot of things to watch, and not just the players. I think the thing we have to watch here, the weather looks unbelievable, especially for Monterey Peninsula. You just don't know what you're going to get. I mean, but it looks like sunshine. The wind apparently is not going to be howling. So now it really falls in the hands of the USGA in terms of controlling the course, and they are under a ton of pressure because the last 2 years – they've had massive problems with course setups. I mean, you go back to they had the bad ruling against Dustin Johnson. Then they had bad pin placements where great shots weren't rewarded. Guys were penalized. The players are chirping about it. And it's going to be very interesting to the point where they're going to be cautious. They're actually talking about on Thursday and Friday syringing the greens after the morning wave goes out, to kind of level the playing field, because, you know, many times you're a victim of your tee time on Thursday and Friday. So to that point, then the course is exactly how they want it. And it will be in the USGA's hands in terms of – because these greens are tiny, Adam. This is not a long course. And they're postage stamp greens. So they cannot – they want to push the envelope, but they don't want to go over the edge again.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you about. And, you know, I saw that they were talking early in the week that there's been a decent amount of rain in Pebble Beach over the last couple of weeks. So the course should be playing relatively soft here, which is definitely different than what we saw last year at Shinnecock Hills, where it was like you were hitting your ball on the concrete and it was just kind of flying all over the place. But that's what's interesting to me about the U.S. Open and about how this rotates to a lot of different courses. You know, Oakmont's been the course twice since 2007, Erin Hills in 2017, Chambers Bay in 15. You had Pinehurst, Marion, the Olympic Club, Congressional, you know, Bethpage. This thing bounces
Oak
around
Hill.
A lot. But right, but when it comes to Pebble Beach, this is an annual stop. So because of how they set the U.S. Open up, because they try to make it, you know, at least in recent history, as challenging as they possibly can, how much does that past form, how much does the past results that we've seen factor into this equation this week? Because I'd like to think that they're going to see pin placements they've never seen before. They're going to see some setups they've maybe never seen before. How much of that matters here going into U.S. Open, which we know is traditionally a very tough event?
Well, Tiger won this event in 2000 by 15 shots. It was a ridiculous, dominant performance. And, you know, in his press conference leading up to this thing, you know, he said the plan of attack and why he ate them alive was he had the right angles. When he missed, he always missed on the right side. And the bottom line is you're putting on Poana, not bent greens. So there'll be guys that are just going to be lost from the get-go. I mean, there are guys that just don't play the West Coast swing because of the Poana greens. Well, they're going to play it now because it's the U.S. Open. But the bottom line is you have to leave it below the hole because Poana's weird. I mean, you hit a great putt, and all of a sudden the thing just starts wobbling and it hits a little blade sticking out the wrong way, and the thing goes sideways. So you need to be below the hole so that you can hit a putt with pace and hit it through the Poana. If you're above the hole, it's a hope and a prayer. You know, you the main get the right speed, and then you hope for the best. If you're the guy that can leave it below the hole, and that, you know, that's what Koepka did. That's been Koepka's MO. And in generally speaking, if it gets back to what they historically want U.S. Opens to be, and again, they screwed up the last three, it's middle of the green is a good shot. Because these greens are not big. If you shoot at the middle of greens here, on most of the greens, you're going to be no more than 30 feet away. So the patience is going to be a virtue here.
Yeah, and that typically is the case. As I mentioned, you know, when you look at the winning scores here for the U.S. Open dating back to, you know, really when Tiger won this thing by 15 shots in 2000, a lot of single-digit winning scores. A few years where, you know, plus five was good enough to win at Oakmont and Wingfoot. Plus one's been good enough to win. Even par's been good enough to win. Really, with the exception of Tiger in 2000, Rory at Congressional in 2011, when he won by 8 shots at 16 under, and then Koepka at Erin Hills at 16 under, par's a good score in the U.S. Open. As long as you're avoiding bogeys, that's really what you want to try to achieve. And so, as you mentioned, kind of shooting for the middle of the greens, being okay with a two putt, as long as you get that GIR, you know, that's kind of the thing that you're talking about there with patience and the importance of that. So let's look at the leaderboard. Let's look at the odds board here for this one. It could end up looking like the leaderboard. Who knows? Dustin Johnson, 8-1, Rory, 8.5-1, Koepka, 9-1, Tiger, 11-1, Patrick Cantlay, who's played very, very well this year, 15-1, Spieth, 20, Thomas and Fowler, 25, Rose, 26. I got to say, look, I fully understand looking at DJ, Rory, and Koepka going for his third straight. But as you look at this thing here, there are some very, very strong players, 25, 35, 40-1, because of how top-heavy the board is.
And hey, and that happens, you know, every week. You got me again last week. I can't tell you. And the one thing Nevada doesn't do, which is torture for me, is they don't offer the top five. They'll offer a prop, an individual prop on a guy. You know, will he finish in the top 10 or over under 13.5? I had Shane Lowry last week, you know, runner-up again. You know, picking a winner is hard, man, if they give you the opportunity to get a top five. But I will say this, Adam, and I'm not getting off it. I've said this since January. And you know, when we talk about the golf, you know, I'm swinging for the fences, and I can reload and get a terrific player. You know, if a Rory McIlroy is four back going to the weekend, you know, get him at 12-1, 15-1, you know, on a Friday with Saturday being moving day. So I'm always all about trying to find price. But I would, to me, I rarely do this, but I am all in on Dustin Johnson. And he's been hammered. He's now 7-1 at the Superbook. He's the favorite here. And I just believe this is his tournament. I really, really do. I had he gave it away. He gave it away when Graham McDowell won. And I had Graham McDowell that weekend at a balloon price. No one was more thrilled than me. But Dustin Johnson had a 3-shot lead at Pebble Beach and shot at 82 in the final round. And he's won twice at the AT&T. This course suits this guy's eye. I'm not knocking. I mean, you can make a case for Koepka. Rory McIlroy was dominant last week. We'll have to talk about Tiger because I do think Tiger's in the equation here. But I think this is not a coronation, but I would be shocked if Dustin Johnson is not there on Sunday, vying for it, or maybe doing more what Koepka did at the PGA, where Dustin Johnson has a 3 or 4 shot lead on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you've been beating that DJ drum for a little while. You've mentioned it here on the segments. You mentioned it when we talked about, I believe it was the Masters and the PGA Championship. You said, Dustin Johnson will be my guy at Pebble Beach. So not really surprised to see you sticking with that one there. We'll talk more about Tiger in a couple of minutes because I want to ask about him from a matchup standpoint. But I'll throw out a couple of names that I'm kind of looking at here this week. Jason Day at 35-1. Now, I know Jason Day is not in particularly good form. I fully understand that. But Jason Day has played very, very well at Pebble Beach in his career. And I kind of wonder if this is one of those guys with the health issues. And we've talked about this before. It's always something different with this guy. But he plays really well in majors. And I sort of wonder if at this stage of his career, by the way, he's in the top 10 in strokes gained putting this year, which could obviously help him quite a bit at Pebble Beach. But I sort of wonder if he's just one of those guys, kind of the Allen Iverson type thing where, I'll show up on game day. I'm not going to be there on practice. I kind of wonder if Day is one of those guys that's just going to show up and play really well when the stage is the biggest and the lights are the brightest. So I kind of like Jason Day a little bit here at 35-1. He's played well at Pebble Beach. And I wonder if this is a major angle for him where, when he plays at Memorial or the Arnold Palmer or the Players or something like that, he's going to go out there. He's going to try to finish top 10, top 15. I think he has a different mindset when it comes to majors though.
Yeah. Lane, short game. And as you said, if he gets the putter rolling, and I'll here, let me knock you off your bar stool. If you're sitting on a bar stool doing this, the X factor, he got Steve Williams to fly over from New Zealand to be his caddy. Stevie Williams, Tiger's caddy for all those years, who was on the bag when Tiger won in 2000, knows every blade of grass at this track, knows where you got to be, knows what it takes to win on this course in a major. Steve Williams, who's retired, comes out of retirement for this week to be on the bag for Jason Day.
Ooh, I didn't even know that. I like that. Nice. I'm very happy now. I've kind of been waiting to play my futures and my outrights here, just waiting for the dust to settle.
You better do it because honestly, he'll take some late money. I mean, because they did a big thing yesterday. I mean, that's the thing about the majors, and I love this stuff. The problem is I eat up every ounce of space on my stupid DVR and, going through all the live from the Masters, trying to just, scan through the stuff that's important. And, of the 20-plus hours of stuff I had, bam, there it was. They did about a 20-minute thing on Steve Williams, showed them out there working on number 11, and Williams was throwing the ball over here, pointing to him to go down here, chip from down here. You can see it, and they do, all the caddies do this. But Williams specifically, he hit a couple of chips from just off the green. Williams got three balls and threw them down to the front left off a false front down to the lower left at all. Says, go down there. You can almost see them plot, of course. He goes, your miss is over here. So if you miss the green, this is where you want to be. So he had him go down and chip from the spot where he wants him to be. It's fun to watch that kind of stuff. And, then it comes down to Day's health and is he striking the ball well. But that, to me, is a monster plus that Steve Williams is on the bag for the guy.
So are you looking at any other price plays? I mentioned one of mine. I've got a couple others that I'll mention here as we go throughout the show. But you're on DJ in that 7 or 8 to 1 range. Who else are you looking at this week?
Without doubt, Tommy Fleetwood. This guy has a major game. He is right. There are guys knocking on the door for a major. Shoffley and Cantley come to mind. Majors are going to come their way. I would say Fleetwood, to me, would be a notch just ahead of him. And listen, he had a 16-footer to shoot 62 at Shinnecock Hills on Sunday last year. Fell, a shot short. He missed the, of all the stuff he did, the one he wanted back was the one for 62 on Sunday. Finished second. The year before the U.S. Open, Tommy Fleetwood finished fourth. This guy is going to contend in virtually every major. He was in contention in the PGA. 30-1 is a wonderful price on Tommy Fleetwood.
I like that one, too. I've seen some other people I respect out there in the marketplace mentioning Fleetwood also. Fleetwood, is he a guy that you're going to look at next month for the Open Championship in Northern Ireland as well? Or do you just think Pebble Beach fits him?
I'd be looking at him virtually every major down the road. I honestly believe I think he's better suited to win the U.S. Open than he is to win the British Open. The guy hits fairways. He hits fairways. The links course, the British Open, I think, is open to a lot of guys. I think you bring a boatload of European Tour players into the equation when you get to the Open. But I think Fleetwood's game suits a U.S. Open. I mean, seriously, Adam, I mean, sometimes it's low-hanging fruit. I mean, I just love the guy's game. But in second and fourth in the last two U.S. Opens, I'll go all the way back when I was young. And there were two guys, I don't even, you heard of O'Meara, was always on the leaderboard. But do you remember Scott Simpson from Hawaii? Scott Simpson.
Doesn't ring a bell.
This guy was doing, nothing. Nothing all year. And he'd show up, he would always be on the leaderboard at the U.S. Open. Let's think of the guys that have won the U.S. Open. You go back. Lucas Glover wins this thing. Tom Kite won. He could never get out of his way in most majors, but he always showed up in U.S. Open formats. And the other guy's name, his first name's escaped me. I have a picture of his. Reed was his last name. But they're just guys that you don't have to hit it a million miles. The formula here, and now it is a different game because they hit it so far. And, hitting 8 irons in instead of 6 or 5 irons is a big deal. But a guy, a Zach Johnson kind of guy, okay. He's got to be hitting 6 irons in, but if his iron play is good, but he's hitting from the short grass, a short player can contend here because it's all about staying out of the rough.
Well, I'll throw out another name here then, and I think that he, maybe fits the motif here this week. I'm not going to put my usual IPA money on him, kind of more of like a macro brewery kind of money on him. But Brant Snedeker is a guy that always plays well in California. Was in the top 10 here back in 2010 when the U.S. Open was here. Very, very good strokes gained around the green. He's been putting well this year. Also, he's in the top 10 in putting. I don't love the price at 50-1 because his ceiling, his upside is not the same as the other guys in that price range and the guys above him on the board. But there's something about Snedeker out west in California. And, he's hitting greens and he's making putts. And that's really what you're kind of looking for here this week. What are your thoughts on Sneds?
Well, last week he was lights out. He shot a 60 in the Canadian Open. Now, that course was kind of similar. It was short and the rough was penal, and he went low. I would come right back with Shane Lowry. I'll be honest with you, at 100-1, I had him last week in Canada, and they just ran into a Rory McIlroy buzzsaw. So I would absolutely, and I will say this to you. I will have, I'll throw $5. I'll spread it out. You have a lot of guys. Don't sleep on Graham McDowell. He's 100-1, and you know, last week McDowell made a good. It was a 35-footer, and they showed it, and they made a big deal out of it. He made about a 35-footer, and it was virtually, you know, and yes, this week, but he had to finish in the top 10 to play on his home course in the British Open to qualify at Port Rush. Well, he rolls this 35-footer in. It was like he won the tournament, you know, because his goal all year long was to get his PGA card back and to qualify for the U.S. Open. He gets a win earlier in the season. So he's got his playing privileges, and he accomplished both goals. It's like the anvil is off this guy's shoulder. He's putting the ball great. He's not flashy. He hits it down the middle. And, oh, by the way, he won the U.S. Open when it was played here, and he's coming in off he's got some momentum coming into this. Believe me, there's a guy that should not be 100-1. I could see McDowell. And I think the pairing, if I'm not mistaken, oh boy, he plays with Mickelson, and I don't know, it's a great pairing. I mean, there's two studs. I forget the other guy. It may be Dustin Johnson. I'm not sure. Is Dustin? But anyway, Graham McDowell at 100-1 is not an option.
Three guys specifically I want to ask you about. Then we'll look at a little bit of matchup stuff here. Xander Schauffele. You mentioned him in your video on our Bang the Book YouTube page. We've talked about Schauffele before, who, you know, is obviously very familiar with the California courses as well. As a guy who, you know, sort of, when you look at guys that play really well in majors, he's in that group. He plays well in the majors. He plays well in the FedEx Cup playoff events. Maybe a Jason Day kind of angle here, like I talked about earlier, where, you know, guy, I think Day, it's different. I think he's more focused, more engaged, more motivated for these majors. But for whatever reason, Schauffele, much like Day, saves his best performances for these really star-studded fields. So is Schauffele on your card this week?
Yeah, he is. I mean, the problem is, you know, how many guys can you bet? Now, and my strategy is going to be completely different here because I'm going big on Dustin Johnson. So I need full disclosure, it will change a bankroll and a betting strategy for me. But are he and Cantley worthy of consideration? Yeah, I think these are guys, as I think I said in the videos, they're a whisker away from winning a major. So, yes, you know, he's got the game, you're right, the WGC events, he shows up, was in contention at the British Open. Yeah, I mean, Schauffele's a player. By the way, back, you know, to the video, I wanted to mention this. And it's funny, I did the video, and, you know, you send it to you, and you put the video up. And I don't know why, but out of nowhere, I'm sitting there going, did I even mention Rory McIlroy in the video? I said, I don't think I did. I know and I went back and I looked at it, and I did, and I'm like, oh, do I do the whole thing over again? And I'm like, nah. Like, so, and I wanted to say that the viewers that leave comments, that somebody said, can't believe you didn't mention Rory McIlroy. I'm going, well, good for you, man. I mean, the guy was paying attention. And well, the funny thing is, as great as McIlroy is and as great as he played last week, you know, his wedge play last week was spectacular. His problem is his wedge play is so thoroughly inconsistent. And I'm not doing a cartwheel about McIlroy, because when he won the U.S. Open at Congressional, it poured that entire week. So that was like a PGA Tour stop. They were flag hunting at Congressional. That was more like a PGA Championship than a U.S. Open on the hard, fast, and that's what these greens are going to be this weekend. I really think it takes McIlroy out of the equation. I could be wrong. He comes in off a dominant performance. But I just wanted to give kudos to the one guy. So I can't believe you didn't mention Rory McIlroy. I go, busted. The guy got me.
Well, I'm sure you'll mention McIlroy at Port Rush next month up in Northern Ireland. I'm sure he'll be one of the names that you do mention there for that one.
Well, I did mention him because I don't like him.
That's fair. Right. No, I mean, that's perfectly fine. Perfectly understandable here. You're not going to like every favorite that's out there. I hope that people certainly understand that. All right, next guy I want to ask you about here. Jordan Spieth in a 20-1 range. All of a sudden, Spieth seems to have figured out whatever was wrong with him. He's got, what, three top 10s in a row, I think. He's playing three top 8s in a row, actually. Playing very, very well. Shorter course. You would think that that helps him because he's not the bomber that most of the high-profile guys are. What about Jordan Spieth? I mean, a guy that, you know, generally, again, tends to, for the most part, play pretty well in majors. What do you think about him?
Not for me at the moment. And, you know, certainly a U.S. Open champ at Chambers Bay. The thing that brings him into the hunt here for me would be, I think Koepka said he's only hitting driver four times on this course. Now, that's Koepka. So the fact that the driver is not the prerequisite here, I think, brings him into occasion. It brings him in because, don't forget, as great as he was in the PGA and he was there, man alive, out of nowhere, he'd have these snap hooks. And the driver, to me, is still way too big a bugaboo for Jordan Spieth. If you hit two or three or four or five of those drives over the course of 4 days, you're out. You know, I mean, if he's coming over the top of it like that and leaves himself in some horrific spots, you said avoid bogeys. Bogey's not the worst thing in the world. You're going to avoid double, triple. And I think the snowman's out there. I think a big number or two is out there for speed, so I can't go there.
One more guy to ask you about here, and then, like I said, we'll sort of look at some matchup guys, and I'll kind of mention a couple other players at that point in time. Ricky Fowler. I have to mention this guy. I root for him so hard in every one of these majors. I'll put a small bet on him here this week just because I want to say that, you know, I was on Ricky the time that he actually broke through and won himself one of these majors. 25-1 here this week. Hasn't played a ton here of late. What do you think about Ricky? I mean, can he do this at Pebble Beach?
I would root for him like you would. You know, I mean, he genuinely seems like a great guy. I mean, a real quick story. I don't know if I've done this before with you or not. However many years ago it was, I was doing the radio show at the TPC Summerlin, and we're doing the show from the Hill, and it was on Tuesday, leading up to the tournament. And the tournament director comes up to me and says, "Hey," he said, "I can get Ricky Fowler. I bring Ricky Fowler over. Do you want to get Ricky Fowler on the show?" I said, "That'd be great. Who's Ricky Fowler?" You know, he was, as much as I follow golf, I knew nothing about him from Oklahoma State. But yeah, well, he goes, "No, he's making his tournament debut," and he actually lived in Vegas for 3 months working on his game to come onto the tour. He showed up. He was the most friendly, respectful. He's a, you know, he's a little kid, he's a kid at the time. He's respectful, wonderful. And then I remember walking out on Thursday from where we were doing the radio show and walked out and watched him hit his first pro shot in Vegas. And I've always rooted for the guy. But I hope he doesn't. The price just doesn't warrant it. You know, I mean, he's that close, and you pray that for him that the day comes if he is now, I guess, carrying that mantle of the best player that hasn't won a major. I would always root for him, but the price would dictate no. Before we get to the matchup, let me give you two bombers that I will play. Paul Casey's a different player now. Paul Casey knows how to win. And he was a runner-up in February to Mickelson at the Pro-Am. 50-1 on Paul Casey. If he strikes it down the middle, Paul Casey can contend. And the other guy that is not nuts is Jim Furyk at 125-1. He was 14th in the AT&T. He's a former U.S. Open champ, and he was second in 2016. Furyk is another guy. He just wears you down with boredom. You know, I mean, he's playing from the fairway. And if Jim Furyk, I think, and he has the patience, and I think that veteran nature, he knows what it takes to win this. Jim Furyk's current form, I don't think 125-1 should be the number.
Well, and so Furyk, of course,
there's my grenade.
Furyk, of course, would be a great story here too, especially with, you know, all the different injury things and the stuff that he's been through. He would be a great story to be sure. One thing I do want to mention, circling back to Ricky Fowler real quick, I just want to get your thoughts on this, and I think this is a good segue and transition into looking at some matchup stuff. He hasn't played at this course since 2012. He's not bothered with the Pro-Am. He obviously played in the 2010 U.S. Open, but he hasn't bothered with the Pro-Am. We just talked about Jason Day and, you know, how Stevie Williams knows every intricacy of this course, how he's preparing him for that. So how much does that bother you that a guy like Ricky Fowler hasn't played here in, what, 7 years? So not even just from looking at him from an outright standpoint, looking at Fowler and matchups too, you know, Thursday's kind of a learning curve day for him.
Well, you know, another guy, and of course he showed up last week and the price came down, very similar to what you're talking about with Fowler, because I went and started doing I'm going, if he wins last week, I was going to be sick, because I didn't play him, because I was kind of touting Webb Simpson, that I thought Webb Simpson was a guy that was going to have a big year. He's a completely different player. He's figured the putter out. Ball striking's really good. But I went back and looked. Webb Simpson never played at Pebble Beach. You know, and by their absence, I'll go on the premise they're telling me something. They're not playing there for a reason. The course doesn't suit their eye. And, you know, now, if you come out, you have a great week, and you hit middle of greens and the putter's hot, you know, and you build up some momentum and you figure something out. Like you said, you know, maybe they don't play the Pro-Am because they don't like the 6-hour rounds and you're playing with amateurs and you're playing three different courses. Maybe that's the reason. I mean, I'm not going to discount a guy because he doesn't play there or hasn't played well there, but it's a starting point. I think you have to at least consider it and wonder why.
All right, so as we look at some matchups here, Tiger Woods, 11-1 to win this thing outright. He's obviously going to be placed in matchups with DJ, Rory, Koepka, Cantlay, Spieth, all the guys that are around him here on the board. What do you think about Tiger? I mean, he did not play well at the PGA, did get the win at the Masters, obviously, so we know that he still has that ceiling in him. What about him this week at Pebble Beach? I mean, would you be confident taking him in some head-to-heads against those elite-level players? Are you going to look at him, you know, for an in-tournament bet, something like that? How do you feel about Tiger this week?
I would absolutely play him against Rory McIlroy. I could look at him against Spieth. The Tiger thing, I got that right at the PGA. But it turns out it was something completely different. But my reasoning, I think, was every bit as good, was he had not played since the Masters. And he wasn't he's not the dominant Tiger Woods that he was. But he wins the Masters, this ridiculous accomplishment to come all the way back. Then he gets the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He's an old guy. He's not a robot. That was a letdown to the moon off a 5-week layoff. I thought he had no shot at the PGA. Well, don't forget what happened, and he kind of alluded to this. It was miserable at Bethpage. Remember the rain all week long? This guy, day to day, he's a coin flip. You don't know. Physically, he was a basket case. He was an absolute wreck. He was sore and stiff and the weather and the letdown. He was a complete chuck at the PGA. Then he comes back to Jack Nicklaus's event at the Memorial, and he was throwing darts on Sunday. And he didn't hit the course yesterday. He's hitting the course today. He's all about, he said, the game's fine. He's working on the Poana greens. He's got to play 9 holes today. And he said, it's more about me being fresh and physically ready to go than, you know, beat myself to a pulp working out. But he's building up to a crescendo here. We're at the PGA. The weather, and he was stiff and sore, and he was a physical wreck. The positive experience he has, he knows the course. The weather's going to be good. Tiger is absolutely in play. It's not going to shock me at all that there'll be, a bomber or two or someone that'll be in there. All these tournaments, Adam, you know, you get there. And the Masters finally had happened this year, where you hope there are 8-10 guys, you know, where crazy things can happen. It happened this year at the Masters, where there were 7 or 8 guys with a realistic chance to win on Sunday. Generally speaking, by Saturday night, they thin the herd, and there'll be 4 guys, 3 or 4 guys that are going to be in contention. I think there'll be a bomber in there, but it is not going to shock me in the least if it's Dustin Johnson, Koepka, and Tiger in the top five on Sunday, early on Sunday, with trying, and then some other guy trying to kick the door down. I really think those three guys are in this, in it deep.
All right, the next guy I want to ask you about from a matchup standpoint here, Justin Thomas, 25-1, world-class player, phenomenal player, another guy that plays very, very well in strong fields and strong events. But dating back to the start of March here, zero top tens. He's only played six events because he was banged up a little bit. Best finish was tied for 12th at Augusta. He's played twice since Augusta, top 20 last week at the RBC. Did shoot under 70 in his last three rounds. But what do you think about Justin Thomas here? Because in matchups, he'll be with Spieth, Fowler, a great player in Justin Rose, probably Schauffele, and maybe some of the favorites out there as well, you know, with Thomas getting, you know, $1.40, $1.50 in some of those matchups. What about him? I mean, is this a guy that can kind of flip the switch here? Because we know what his upside is.
Oh, yeah. He can. And the price is telling you there's still a lot of question marks. He had a wrist injury. And a wrist injury for a golfer is a bad thing. And here's the and I don't know, like you said, if he hits the middle of greens and he can flag hunt, throw darts, it would never shock me if Thomas tees it up and he's in contention. The problem is the rough here, and he's got a wrist that's sketchy. He better be, I think his brain's going to be saying, just hit wedge out. You know, I mean, the rough with him worried about his wrist makes him a real buyer beware guy for me. Now, if he does nothing but hit fairways, certainly he can do some good things. But the wrist injury with the cabbage here at the U.S. Open, not for me.
All right, one more guy I want to ask you about from a matchup standpoint. We'll wrap up the Pebble Beach portion of the show, then we'll touch real quickly on Game 7. John Rahm, he's in the 30-1 range. Again, another guy, very high ceiling, can be inconsistent, can be a little bit temperamental as well. He'll, again, be paired in matchups with that same group that Thomas was in, Fowler, Rose, Schauffele, Adam Scott, Hideki Matsuyama, who's been very, very good with his ball striking, hasn't made enough putts this year. Rahm's going to have some tough matchups as well. What do you think about him here at Pebble Beach?
You know what I love about John Rahm this week? And he's a sneaky guy. He might be one of these guys maybe you get on Friday night. But he's flying under the radar. You know, he was one of these guys that everybody was talking about. And now he's kind of flying under the radar. And the thing that generally holds him back is his temperament. But he sure's got the game. And I mean, he hits it deep. And when he's on a roll, he feeds off that and he can go low. The problem is he gets one bad bounce, hits it down the middle of the fairway, it bounces sideways, and he ends up getting a horrible lie. And then he goes up and he tries to bite off more than he can chew, and he snap hooks one, and all of a sudden there's a triple out of nowhere, and he can unravel. I mean, that's the one thing you're fearful of him is, you know, what is his mindset? Will he be able to kind of hold up and not pout? And honestly, we haven't seen him for a while. Let's see here. He missed the cut at the PGA, and he missed the cut at the Charles Schwab Challenge. You know what? I mean, there's a guy, I'll guarantee you, I mean, he has done nothing but just, you know, maybe being out of tournament play and just going back and working on your game. Maybe they figure something out, and he's a guy who comes out of the gate and maybe does make some noise. I think he's a sneaky play, yeah.
All right. Should be a great U.S. Open here at Pebble Beach, to say the least. Hopefully we've given you some good insights here, both for matchups and picking some guys to win this thing outright. Speaking of winning outright, the Stanley Cup will be awarded tonight. Just a matter of who winds up hoisting the cup. Will it be the Blues? Will it be the Bruins? Bruins, $1.75 favorite out there. Kind of the consensus number. It is a little bit higher at some shops as well. They do have home ice advantage, of course, for this deciding Game 7. But the Blues have been the best road team in the playoffs that we've seen in quite some time. So Mr. Blessing. Who are you looking at tonight in Game 7?
I had the Blues before the series, and I'm going to run with it. And the funny thing was, you thought maybe they could step up to the plate, having gotten the win and a chance to close it out at home. But you know, when they won in Boston, well, when they go back to St. Louis, Boston's going to get a split out of that. Listen, it's for the Cup. Yeah, home ice, great. The first goal's monster in this game. But St. Louis plays, it's ridiculous. I mean, and it's the players know, but they can't help themselves. St. Louis plays a completely different game on the road. And then they get home and they try to impress the home fans and they try to do the tic-tac-toe highlight reel goal. On the road, they dump it in and they go get it. And then they crash the net. And that's the simplistic game, that they're 9-3 on the road. The first goal is huge. I think St. Louis can win this game. And ultimately, Rask wins the Conn Smythe if Boston wins. It's a coin flip between, and I bet Jaden Schwartz, who's been really quiet in the final, to win the Conn Smythe. But now it's a coin flip on the other side for Binnington or O'Reilly. But I think at the end of the day, I think the difference will be if St. Louis wins this game, it'll be their defense. And Petrangelo, Bomeister, Parayko's a monster. And the guy, since he's returned to the lineup, that is really, really good at creating offense from the blue line is done. And I think at the end of the day, I think St. Louis defense will jump into play, help create some offense. And then if they can get the lead, the problem is when they get the lead, sometimes they sit back and they're hanging on for dear life. You know, Game 7, nothing like it. Honestly, hope it goes to overtime. But you need a thumbnail here to separate these two teams. I'm taking the plus price.
Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people check out those two shows, Brian?
The shows are live at kshp.com, noon to 2 Pacific, weekdays. The shows are archived at sportsbookradio.com. It's going to be nuts around here. Get to dish out the cup tonight. NHL awards ceremony will be here next week, and then right after that, the Golden Knights, they've got developmental camp. You know, I mean, it's a year-round thing, and then the draft will come. And I'm telling you, this is going to be a wild off season in the NHL. This Jeff Skinner deal that was signed in Buffalo, 8 years, $72 million, it's just resonating around the league. I mean, we're all these agents are going, really? Here, look at my guys' numbers compared to that. And there are guys that are going to be moved with salary cap constraints. There could be offer sheets. And draft day is going to be really, really interesting this year in free agency. So even in the summer, you would think, oh, it's quiet on the hockey front. That's not the case. And, oh, by the way, there's a certain funny-shaped object that they'll start throwing around pretty soon. And we're doing conference previews, getting ready for the NFL and college football, too.
Yeah, over on our Bang the Book YouTube page, Brian's done all 8 divisions here with NFL season win total thoughts. Also a very good golf video for you to check out over there on our Bang the Book YouTube page as well.
Hey, real quick, bud, give me two teams. I got two teams I like this year from a season win total perspective. You got a team or two that you're fading or you really like?
I mean, so far, I think the only one I really like that I've dug into, I like Pittsburgh over a little bit. You know, I think that the hype train for the Browns is a little bit too fast right now. Their schedule's very tough early on. It's going to beat them up early in the year. I don't trust Baltimore with this, you know, run heavy. Lamar Jackson gets hit all the time offense. Cincinnati is not particularly strong. So I think Pittsburgh fares pretty well in those 6 division games. I think that reports of their demise are kind of a little bit overblown right now. James Conner was very good last year. Smith-Schuster, of course, took over for Antonio Brown. I think they'll be just fine. I think Pittsburgh over is one that I will have a little bit of scratch on.
Well, and you take this with a grain of salt, full disclosure, I'm a Bills fan. But I think what Brandon Bean did with this team, we'll see if that offensive line can come together quickly. But don't forget, they had the second-best defense in the league last year. They finally got some wide receivers and some stuff, and nothing that's going to scare anybody, but an improved wide receiving core. I think the offense is going to be a lot better. I think Josh Allen takes a step forward. And the Bills have a five out of seven game homestand in the middle of the season and start with a relatively easy schedule, I think they go over. I think they're at least an 8-win team. But the one I keep coming back to, I just can't get away from, is Jacksonville. Jacksonville with a season win total of 8. Last year, you know, they had a great year, and then all of a sudden, bam, you know, it happens all the time. Weight of expectations, regression, yet Bortles losing games. The problem with them, their head cases, can they behave on the sidelines, off the field, and all that stuff. But I think Nick Foles coming in there, who can win a few games if he needed to, but will not lose games. I think Jacksonville reverts back to what they were 2 years ago. I like Jacksonville a lot to go over 8 wins.
That's interesting. I kind of like Jacksonville under a little bit just because they don't have the same framework around Foles that the Eagles had. You know, not only do they not have Doug Peterson, but they don't have the same skill position guys. I mean, if they could stay healthier, maybe there'd be a chance. But I think that's what worries me is I don't know if Foles has enough guys to spread the ball around to. No knock on the defense. The defense is great. But that's kind of my question is, you know, does Foles have enough guys that he can spread the football around to? I don't know. Well, plenty of time to talk NFL.
You're right.
Sure.
They're limited, I mean, to a degree. I agree with that. But it's a quarterback league. And the bottom line last year, you know, I mean, if Fournette comes back, behaves, and they hammer the rock on the ground and with that defense, and you got a quarterback that's not throwing pick sixes and going three and out, six possessions in a row, the upgrade at the quarterback position where this guy's not losing games. Yeah, his goal is to go out there and not lose a game. You know, the Jacksonville almost went to the Super Bowl with Blake Bortles just trying not to lose games. Foles is capable of not losing games.
That's true. That's fair. The problem for me with Jacksonville is I think the rest of the division is getting stronger around them. I mean, I really like Indianapolis over. I love what they've done to build on the defensive side of the ball, and Luck answered all those health questions last year. You know, for Houston, lots of injuries at the skill positions for them. Obviously, defensively, they have a lot of injuries that they usually have to worry about, but I think they're a little bit stronger this year. And I think Tennessee, you know, in the second year with a little bit more depth for Marcus Mariota with, you know, the strides that they made defensively last year, I think they're a little bit better too. So that's the problem for me with Jacksonville is somebody in that division has to lose. And right now, as I stack up the other teams, I think it's Jacksonville.
All right, but we got plenty to talk about in the coming week. Let me tell you that.
It's good. You know what? I'll tell you what. The one knock I could have on Bang the Book Radio, and I love doing this. I love all the guests we have. I think a lot of times we don't have enough difference of opinion. So I think it's a good thing that you and I have one there in the AFC South.
No,
it makes for good radio.
Well, I mean, just you know what the stuff being a love fest? I mean, I'd sit here. We could argue all day long after the thing was over. Go have a beer, but you're right. I mean, you don't want these things being a love fest. I mean, and the funny thing is, you would hope there are people out there say, well, you know, I respect Adam. I love what Adam's got to say. You know, he sold me, and you know the guy. That Brian guy's an idiot. You know, I'm going opposite anything he says. Yeah, Adam won me over. Whatever. If half the people like what you say or half the people like whatever. But the funny thing is, when you have that healthy debate, sometimes you argue with one another to the point where maybe someone actually makes a case that wins you over. Or maybe the most important thing is it gets you off a bet you were going to make. You say, yeah, you know what, okay, that's a buyer beware thing. I won't make that bet. And sometimes the bet you don't make is the best bet.
I agree. Absolutely. Well, speaking of radio and debates, I know you've got plenty of radio to get to here today. So, Brian, thank you so much as always, man. Really appreciate it. To our listeners out there, make sure you follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Blessing. And we'll talk to you again real soon, man.
All right, bud. Have a great weekend. I'm looking forward to this golf tournament. It's going to be fun.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, KSHP.com, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. And, of course, you can check him out on our Bang the Book YouTube page on a weekly basis as well. Coming up on Thursday, new edition of the Bettors Box, our MLB betting podcast hosted by yours truly. Make sure you check that out. No UFC this week, so we'll be back with Christian Pina next week for the upcoming event. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.